come tonight. I hope it'll be worth it. We're going to speak tonight about Zav and Zava. And the truth is that Zav and Zava really have to begin with Nida, and we're going to try and speak about all three together. I'll explain. We're going to start from the beginning. The concept of Nida, of course, is that a woman every month becomes Tameh when she receives her period. Now, according midin ha-Torah, according to Halacha d'Oraisa, according to Halacha as stated in the Torah, this only is a tumah for 7 days. Regardless of how long she sees blood or doesn't see blood, it only goes on for 7 days. The Rabbanim came along and they said, no, after a woman sees blood, she has to count 7 days in which she sees no blood before she becomes tahor. Why is this so? Because the Rabbanim said, we do not know if nowadays enough to distinguish between a woman who's a nida and a woman who's a zava. And we'll begin, therefore, with a zava, and then we'll explain what a zava is afterwards. A zava is, therefore, a woman who, beyond the days in which she would normally see blood, which had to do with nida, with menstruation, would see blood which was unexplained by the menstrual process. And in this state, in those the seeing blood other than days of nida, there are different parameters. Whereas in days of nida, again, midoraisa, all you have to wait is the 7 days of the month, regardless of whether she sees all those 7 days or she's part of those 7 days. At the end of those 7 days, she can go to the mikveh regardless. And when she sees other parts of the month, blood which is unexplained by Nida, then she has to stop seeing blood and then wait 7 days before going to the mikveh. So therefore, since in our day and age it became difficult for us to distinguish between which days of the month were Nida days and which days of the month were Ziva days, therefore Rabbanan said, you know what? In all cases, assume that the woman should assume that she is perhaps a Zava, and therefore she has to wait 7 days before going to the mikveh. Now, when there was a Beis HaMikdash, if a woman would become a Zava, and she would know for certain that this was the Tumah which came about, the impurity which came about as a result of Ziva, as opposed to Nida, at the end of those 7 days, when she went to the mikveh, she would also bring a Karban, a sacrifice to the Beis HaMikdash. That's a Zava. Okay? A Zav is a similar thing by a male. In other words, if a male has an emission which comes about for three... Oh, you know, I really should explain something. It's important. That there's a difference between a woman who is a zava for 1 day or 2 days and a woman who's a zava for 3 days straight. And the same thing is true about a man who's a zava for 1 day or 2 days or 3 days straight. In order for a woman to become tame for and have to wait 7 clean days before becoming tahar, she has to see the blood for 3 days straight at a time other than the time of her monthly period. If she only saw 1 day at such a time, she only becomes tameh midoraisa again. Nowadays, these halachas have all become one big glob. We don't distinguish anymore between the various different types. But again, midoraisa, if she would see blood for only 1 or 2 days at a time a month which wasn't her regular time to see, at that point in time, she would only become tameh for 1 day. And she would not have to bring a korban. The next day she could go to the mikveh and become tahor. It's only if she saw blood for 3 days straight at a time which wasn't the regular time of nida that she becomes tameh for 7 days and only goes to the mikveh subsequently and then brings a korban. Similarly, by a zav, by a man who becomes a zav, the same thing applies. If he has an emission which is lasts for 1 day or 2 days, then he only has to go. He goes to the mikveh the following day and becomes tahor that evening. If, however, he had emission for 3 days straight, that is considered to be a zav. And such a person also, just like the woman has to wait for 7 days, the man has to wait for 7 days before becoming tahar. In this case, when the man becomes a zav, however, there's a distinction between him and a zava. Whereas a zava at the end of her 7 days goes to a regular mikveh, a zav at the end of his 7 days, a man, has to go to a mikveh which has fresh spring water. Maim chaim, the same type of water which is used to make a para aduma. That's a very basic difference. Besides that, of course, the zav, just like the zava, has to bring a korban, has to bring a sacrifice in the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, that is what a zav and zava are. Again, in contradistinction to a nida is at a specific time of month. It's a monthly period. And regardless of how many days she sees blood, at the end of 7 days, she goes to the mikveh. Even if she saw blood mamish up to the end of the 7th day, that evening she can go to the mikveh. A zava is at the time of month when she does not expect a period. and she sees blood for 3 days straight, then she must wait 7 clean days before going to the mikveh. Then she goes to the mikveh and brings a korban, and she's tar. A zav was somebody who had an emission, a man who had an emission for 3 days straight. Then he is a zav for 7 days. He has to wait 7 clean days. Then he has to go to a mikveh, which is made out of spring water, and then he brings his korbanos. Now, in order to explain a little bit of the background behind Ziva, first we look at the Rabbeinu B'chai. Rabbeinu B'chai here is on top on page 1. We have a lot to do tonight. I don't think we're going to get finished all I want to do, but we'll get as far as we can go. Rabbeinu B'chai makes 2 major points, which are very important. Rabbeinu B'chai was a Rishon. He was from the disciples, I don't know if a direct disciple, but from the school of the Ramban, and he lived in the 1300s. It says here on the top right, just a solid page of text, and I should have marked off in each copy where to start from, but I didn't have that much foresight. So if you take a look down, counting from the top of the page, 3, 6, 9, 11 lines down. 11 lines down, there's a period 4 words into the line. Rabbeinu B'chai comes to explain the entire concept of arayos, why the Torah is so strict in terms of safekeeping forbidden relationships. And this applies to Nida as well. Because since there and the woman are the limbs and the vessels and the tools, so to speak, to create children, mankind has to have the approach of purity to the utmost to this type of procedure and these type of tools. In order that the creation of man, of new children, should be completely pure. And that the child which is formed should be suitable to receive the pure neshama, which is a Jewish neshama. And it's known, all the traits of the soul come after the formation thereof. So therefore, it's very important to the Torah that Jews safeguard all aspects of forbidden relationships and all aspects of Nida in order that the formation of new children should be done with the utmost purity, in order that the body which is created be suitable for containing a holy Jewish neshama. Now, that explains why we're so careful about it. But what does Nida itself come from? And now we come to a fundamental concept which we'll come back to time and again this evening. And if you take a look, starting now from the bottom of the text block here, 3, 6, 9, 10 lines to the bottom. So there's a period, 4 words from the end of the line, and the word there which I want to start with is vida. Does everybody see that? And vida, and no. Ki acholi hazeh, this disease of nida, hamudva be'isha, which is found in a woman, lo mitzanu bin kevos sharaminim, we do not find it in the females of any other species. In other words, it's unique to mankind. No other animal has this type of process. I'm not sure exactly what happens biologically in animals. I don't know exactly how the biological process occurs, but there is no concept of neither. What?
Well, there is a menstrual cycle in animals.
There is such a cycle by animals? All animals have the cycle?
Female dogs.
Uh-oh. Well, we're in trouble then.
What? Here they go into heat
and it's menstruation. Yeah, there is? Okay, well, Rabbeinu B'chai, I don't know exactly where he got his information then. Rabbeinu B'chai says, it's not material to the body he's about to say, but biologically he says that this choli, this disease, amudva bisha lomit sanu ben kevos sharmim, we do not find by females of other species, ela b'mino adam bilvad, only by men. He or isha, only by a woman. And he says, and this is not relevant to whether it applies to other species or not, but he says that this comes from the gzardin, the decree against Chava. Shenemar lo, it says to Chava, the punishment for the sin of the Eitz Hadas, of eating from partaking from the tree of knowledge in Gan Eden, was harbe arbe. I'm going to give you pain and anguish in the birth process. And therefore it's not in other species. Because animals have no mind. And they don't have to pay attention to being punished for sins. There is no such concept by them. By us, we're reminded by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends us certain illnesses or certain diseases or certain types of limitations that we have to repent for whatever caused this limitation. in this case, and there is a new nature which was made in mankind, which is the menstrual cycle, which reminds the woman and the man, you have to atone for the chet of Adam HaRishon. Now, this is just in a nutshell, and we're going to expand upon this later on. Just, I want to show this to you in Rabbeinu B'chaya inside, that Nida and all those types of Tumah have to do with the chet of Adam HaRishon and of Chava. Because we're going to tie in Zav as well to Adam HaRishon and Chava. That's one interpretation, the interpretation of the Rabbeinu B'chaya. Now, on the other hand, there's the interpretation here of another Rishon from the 14th century, the Sfarnu, who consistently, through the Parshios of Tazria and Mitzora, says a very similar idea by many of these Tumas. First of all, he mentions, and I wanted to show you just a couple of paragraphs here. First of all, he talks about the Tumah which we associate with birth. We know whenever a woman gives birth, she becomes Tameh for a certain amount of time, and then at the end of that period of Tumah, of impurity, she again has to bring a korban in the Beis HaMikdash. She has to bring a sacrifice. Now, one of the sacrifices she has to bring is a chatas, which is a sacrifice which we normally associate with a sin. The question is, everybody asks this question, the Chazal already asked the question, what sin did a woman commit when she gave birth? Right? So, he brings down here, the Chazal give their own explanation. They say that a woman, when she gives birth, she takes an oath that she never wants to give birth again because it causes so much pain. That's one possibility. The Sfarnu here gives another possibility. He says here on the top left, in Pasuk Ches, that's the, six lines from the seventh line from the top. The Chiper Aleh, to atone for her. Ki kol yemei zov tumasa, for all the days in which she's flowing with blood from the birth, which causes her tumah, tiyena komach shevoseh, all of her thoughts, ponos, are directed el iske klei azera, to the area, the parts of her body which contain the child and gave birth, upulasam, and their activities. The lo tiyeh ru'uya lemikdash v'kadoshav, and therefore she is not suited to enter the Beit HaMikdash and eat korbanos, ad shetavi kaparos, until she brings a korban of atonement. What does that mean? V'tifne l'kodesh, to direct, refocus her attention to things which are holy. In other words, says the Sfarnu, an effect of giving birth, by nature, is that a woman now is focused on the areas of her body which are not conducive to having thoughts of Kedusha. That's why after the pain subsides, and after that her mind is less involved in that aspect, she brings a korban chatos in order to symbolize and assist her in redirecting her thoughts to Kedusha and to the sanctity of the Beis HaMikdash in order to re-enter the Beis HaMikdash and eat korbanos. Now, he doesn't just say, the Sfarnu, that it's an effect of an event. In other words, that since an event like this occurred, therefore the woman's thoughts are focused on this, and therefore she has to go through some procedure of cleansing. He says also that such a focus of thoughts brings about certain conditions. And that's what he speaks about at the end of Parashas Metzora. And first of all, he says, in the on the bottom right hand side, he's speaking about Zav, and he says in the fifth line, the second word in the line which comes after a comma, why does Ziva occur? Asher Yikra Arov, most of the time Ziva occurs. Now, disease it's associated with, we believe that mystically this disease occurs. The Sibas Rove, normally because of the constant or a great amount Hasmodas Hamashkel of a man having relations Virhurov and focusing his thoughts on relations Asher Bo Lo Techtal Zimas Yivelos Chatos, that in this situation he will not cease from contemplating thoughts of sin. Uvechein, and therefore, says the Sfarnu, Roy Shis HaPershiv Nekim, it's suitable that he should count 7 clean days, in other words, Asher Bom Yasuri Hurura Milibo, in order to remove those thoughts from his heart. V'yitvo min HaTumah, and he should toivo from the Tumah. V'yichaper b'chatas v'ola, and he should atone with the korbanos he brings, the chatas and the ola, Amasha Pah, we hear on that which he was active in, and that which he thought about. That's what he says about Zav. Then he says a similar thing about Zava. If you skip down the Pasuk Yutes, which is 5 lines down, V'isha ki tiyah Zava dam. Lime dini anida vazava, the teacher us the halachos of nida and zava. Vehitin es azava korban v'chatos v'ola. The reason why zava is required to bring a korban chatos and an ola, uvizehe eden, this he testified. Ki lo yikreze bivnos amo, this will not occur in daughters of our nation. Zulati lahoyer oznam ameri kodem, unless it's in order to literally open their ears, to arouse them that they had some prior problem. Bepoal, either in activities, vuva machshava, or in thought. Now, it's interesting, this Forno brings down, ki hu amnam har bosa onesh, it's true that this is part of the increased punishment. Shonashes chava, with which chava was punished. Al pulasa machshavta, on her activities and thoughts. Shenichlan, this is included, like Rabbeinu Bechaya said, b'amru har be'ar be'etzmonech, in the increased travail which a woman undergoes. But it's also part and parcel of the reason why a woman becomes a zava, not just because of the punishment, because that would suffice for nida, perhaps, but for zava, that truly does not suffice, because zava is above and beyond the regular nida period. So for zava, the reason, says the Sfarnu, is very similar to the reason he gave for a zav. In other words, this is a sign from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Either it happens naturally, in other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made it work this way, or this is a unique event which happened because HaKadosh Baruch Hu mystically interferes with this woman. I don't know, it's not clear in the Sfarnu. But in any event, somehow or another, there's a cause and effect here. If you focus your thoughts too much on these types of matters, then you get this kind of emission in order to remind you, hey, it's no good. You have to do tshuva. You have to concentrate your thoughts in other places. And therefore, v'chein, again, here he says, Roy shetispor shivanakim, she should count 7 days of cleanliness, ad yarele ruach tshuva zotar, until she brings upon herself through those 7 days a spirit of tshuva and purity, vaz titbol, and then she goes to the mikveh, to chupar, and she should atone for herself b'chatos with the korban, apulas hara, bond the activity which was bad, uva ola, and through the korban ola which she brings, she also atones ala machshava on her thoughts. Okay, so here we see in the Sfarnu an important theme, that the focus of thoughts is both the cause of an incident, in case of Zav and Zava, and is an effect thereof in the case of a woman who gave birth. And that focus of thoughts required an atonement, not an atonement in the sense so much of being mechaper for an avera, but rather in the sense of redirecting her thoughts to Kedusha. Now, nonetheless, it seems that there's a qualitative difference between a Zav and a Zava, because a Zav has to go to a Mayim Chaim Mikveh, right, a fresh spring, which is a higher degree of tara, of purity, than a regular mikveh, which is just made out of rainwater. Why is Zav more of a, more severe than Zava? Now, the Michta Milio brings down here on the bottom left, I won't read inside with you, he brings down that the Sfarim say that Sfira Saomer and Ziva are connected. The 7 weeks which we count Sfira Saomer from Pesach to Shavuos are directly correspond to the 7 days of Tara from Ziva. That's what that is the connection which is made not by him but by the Zohar in Parsha Samor. Says the Michta Milio, the concept of seven is rebuilding one's spirituality starting from the bottom. Just like every week we build from Sunday till Shabbos in 7 days, so to every count of seven is building a spiritual entity up to its completion on the seventh day. He says, Ziva is symbolic. If a woman becomes a Zava, it's symbolic of a chet dak. I think the way he puts it is, chet bedakus. It's a subtle sin. In other words, like the Sfarnu said, it's a sin which is subtle in the sense that it's something which occurred in the thoughts. It's not something which is apparent necessarily, because you do not have to commit an avera with your actual body in order to become a zav or a zava. It happens because your thoughts were focused in the wrong place. It's much harder to realize such a sin, and that's why the Torah says, listen, I'm doing you a favor, I'm letting you know you sin by creating a disease which comes when you have thoughts which are improper. This disease requires you to redirect your thoughts. Keep the Shiva Nakim in order to redirect your thoughts. The same thing was true about Sfira Saomer when they came out of Mitzrayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, listen, you have been involved in the Egyptian mentality till now. Now I'll give you 7 weeks. 7 days are not enough for all those years of Egyptian mentality. I'll give you 7 weeks to redirect and build up yourself until you reach the level for Matan Torah. Now, it seems to me that Zav by a man comes for a far greater, how should I put this? It's more devastating and far-reaching than the Ziva by a woman. Now, there are several proofs to this. The Gemara says that by a Zav, when a man becomes a Zav, he only becomes a Zav if it's clear that this came about as a result of thoughts which had to do with improper things. Here, Hure Avera, thoughts of Avera. The Gemara says very specifically that if one could attribute the fact that a man became a Zav to his eating too much or drinking too much or some other type of biological phenomenon, he doesn't become a Zav. That's one thing the Gemara points out. The other thing we have to remember is that by a man, there's halacha that even in one incident of Hotzah, Zer Levatola, of an emission, which is not done properly, he is committing an Avera. There is a prohibition on a man to waste his seed, so to speak. It's called Otsa Zer Levatola. Whereas by a woman, there is no such Isser. And therefore, the entire concept of Zav, which is in essence 3 days of this type of emission, is built upon, it's really a different type of emission, it's supposed to be a different substance, but nonetheless, the entire concept is based on something which is an Avera in and of itself. Whereas by a woman, there is no Avera for a woman to be a Nida. And even by a Zava, in and of itself, there is no Avera. It shows that she has something she has to rectify, but the act itself is not an act of Avera. Whereas by a man, the act itself, even if it's against his will and involuntary, of being a Zav, it's an Avera. It's an Avera b'shogeg. An Avera tzotzer avatola, having an emission for a man is an Avera. So therefore, it seems that the Avera of Zava, or rather, the condition of being a Zava, is much more subtle than the condition of being a Zav. And the reason is because the man is much more led astray by the thoughts which he has, precisely because the nature of a man is different than the nature of a woman, who's not led that far astray. And the Torah recognized that, and therefore the Torah gave more of a requirement for Tara for the man and for the than for the woman. And that's why the Torah likens Spiros Omer to Zava, in order to show that even a subtle sin is also a sin. In other words, not like a Zav by a man, where it's so blatant and obvious to us that he's really mired in Tumah, and he requires much more Tara, because we know for sure that this came about as a result of some sort of thought of impurity. Because if it wasn't as a result of a thought of impurity, like we said, he wouldn't become Tame. Well, he becomes Tame if we know for sure it's from one of those thoughts. But even in the case of a Zava, even cases which are subtle and not as Tame, one has to be sure to eradicate and keep 7 days of purity. So there's a basic difference between Zav and Zava. Now, we're going to expand upon all this. What we just said till now is very, very brief, and in a nutshell, we're going to expand upon it a bit more. I want to read with you a little bit of Rabbi Arya Kaplan here. Now, Rabbi Kaplan here is more explicit in the language he uses than we would normally be used to using in this class, because this book was written really for people who are not from, in order to explain the Torah concepts. So you'll excuse his language. He speaks about here. I'm not going to read the whole development here. I'm going to start now from the bottom on the left, from page on where it says page 352. He describes on the top on page 351. He describes the concept of how the menstruation process works. Then he says on the bottom, this well-known fact is by no means that simple or logical. From a biological standpoint, it would be much more economical if the uterine lining would be reabsorbed instead of expelled. This would certainly be more aesthetic and comfortable for the woman. She would then not have to lose a significant amount of her vital fluids each month. Even more efficient from a biological viewpoint would be a situation that would allow the womb to remain in a constant state of readiness to nourish the fertilized ovum. Actually, there's no biological or medical reason why the uterine lining must be expelled and restored each month. There's no reason why the ovum has to die only to be replaced by another egg. Most biologists look upon this example of unexplained. Most biologists look upon this as an example of unexplained inefficiency in the human reproductive system. To the primitive mind, which had no idea of the inner workings of the womb, the very idea that a woman should lose a portion of her vital fluids was both bizarre and frightening. They could not explain it logically, and therefore they attributed it to some evil force. According to most anthropologists, this is one of the main reasons so many taboos surround the menstruating woman in many primitive cultures. We see, however, that all of our biological sophistication does not really help us to understand this natural phenomenon. With all our scientific knowledge, it still remains an unexplained inefficiency of the human reproductive system. Now, let's skip to the top of the next column. When we look at menstruation in light of human perfection in general, it clearly fits the pattern. as a result of Adam's sin, man lost the ability to perfect himself, both spiritually and physically. As mentioned earlier, the clearest manifestation of this physical imperfection is man's mortality. Man wears out and dies. The human body does have the innate capability of constantly renewing itself. In theory, at least, man has the potential of living forever. This, however, is something that he cannot attain as long as he is in a state of imperfection. I'm going to skip that paragraph. Another manifestation of this imperfection is in childbirth itself. Rather than being the natural function that it should logically be, childbirth is often a most traumatic experience. The woman is hospitalized as if she was experiencing a serious illness, rather than partaking in one of the most natural of bodily functions. The Torah openly states that this is a manifestation of man's imperfection associated with the sin of Adam and Eve. As God told the first woman, "I will increase your anguish in pregnancy. With anguish you shall bear children." Far from being the natural biological function of continuing the species, pregnancy and childbirth have become painful and anguishing experiences. A third aspect of the imperfection of man's reproductive process is evident in the general attitude towards sex. Rather than being a simple, natural, biological function, sex is the source of man's greatest compulsions and frustrations. There have been many experiments, such as free sex, which have attempted to restore sex to its status as a natural human function, but all these have remained unsuccessful. Man's innate nature demands that he should have psychological conflicts with regard to sex. One obvious area where man's lack of sexual integration is apparent is with respect to his attitude towards his body. Of all creatures, man is the only one who experiences shame from his nakedness. This is one of the clearest indications of how Adam's sin affected his entire sexual makeup. Before the sin, the Torah says of man, the two of them, the man and his wife, were naked, but they were not ashamed. After the sin, however, Adam was to declare, "I was afraid because I was naked." This change dramatically indicates the fundamental change in man's attitude towards both sex and his body in his degraded state. Returning to our original discussion, it now becomes obvious why a woman is considered unclean when she has her period. This, too, is associated with humanity's degraded state and expulsion from Eden. Indeed, our sages openly declare that menstruation is the result of humanity's sin. Therefore, until the woman purifies herself from this ritual uncleanness, she is not allowed to enter the grounds of the Holy Temple, which is a miniature Eden, although this does not apply to going to a synagogue. Then he goes on to explain that the same thing is true, going to the next page, the third paragraph, for precisely the same reason that a person who is ritually unclean cannot enter the Holy Temple, neither cannot participate in sexual intercourse. Neither represents the state of expulsion from Eden. As a result of the covenant of circumcision, however, the sexual act is one of holiness, and therefore is associated with man's state before the expulsion. Therefore, as long as a woman is in a state of nida, she cannot participate in the holy act of sex. On a simpler level, nida is a sign of the imperfection of the human reproductive process. As long as a woman is in a state of nida, she may not partake in this reproductive process. Now, let's reiterate this a little bit. What the Rabbi Kaplan is stating is really what was stated in Rabbeinu B'chaim Nisfornu, in that before the chait of Adam Rishon, there was no concept of nida. And before the chait of Adam Rishon, there was also no concept of mila, and these two concepts are interrelated. By that we mean before Adam Rishon was created, sinned, the world had the capability of reaching perfection. It was a perfect world. All Adam Rishon had to do was refrain from eating the Eitz HaDaat. In essence, there's a significance here. The only aveira, the only mitzvah which Adam Rishon had was an aveira to refrain, not to go and do something. Why? Because the world is perfect. Just don't tamper with it. That's all he had to do. Just stay away from the Eitz HaDaat Tovara, Eitz HaDaat and the Eitz HaChaim. That's all. You have a perfect world, just make sure not to ruin it. What Adam Rishon did with the chait was he ruined the world. He went and he took a perfect world, Gan Eden, and he made it imperfect. This imperfection had several ramifications. One second. A, was that the world now requires rectification. B, that the males are now born uncircumcised, as opposed to previously, in order to symbolize, you have a Brit Mila to show that a man is imperfect, he has to work to perfect himself. And C, the woman has this concept of nida. In other words, there is this constant cycle of impurity to remind us that, in fact, the world is an imperfect place and we have to strive to perfect it. Now, what did you want to ask? Yeah.
Cain and Abel, they were born before the Adam and Hava sinned,
or? Cain and Abel were born before, yeah.
Before, yes.
Were they born, one second.
After.
They were born after. They were conceived before. They were born after. I don't know if that's true. I don't remember now.
Because
They were conceived before, for sure, but were they born after? No, they weren't born before. They have to be. They were born after. Yeah, they were born after. Yeah, they were born after. They were born after. Yeah. It says only Adam Rishon and Chava were sent out of Gan Eden. So they were born after. But I think there's a. Yeah, I think. I don't remember. I don't want to say for sure, though, offhand, without looking it up. In any event, that is why acts and places which have to do with Kedusha are off-limit for somebody who's Tamei. Somebody who is in that state of imperfection cannot enter the Beis HaMikdash, which represents to us perfection in this world, to the extent that we have it, and they kind of participate in activities such as relations which have to do with perfection, and therefore these are banned from people who are impure. At least impurities which have to do with specifically this chait, which Adam Rishon sinned with. Now I want to speak about that just a little bit more, in that we see that the chait of Adam Rishon in eating from the Eitz Hadas was that he made himself, and Chava made herself, Baalei Taiva. The first chait to be committed was a chait of lust. What did they lust after? The food. In essence, even prior to that, what was the motive of the nachash, of the snake, in getting Chava and Adam to sin? Also lust. It says that the nachash had a lust for Chava. However, we understand that it's not relevant tonight, but we see all the sin which was at, or the fundamental root of the sin was one of taiva. And since the first sin had to do with taiva, with lust, therefore its ramifications were that all of a sudden man and woman became aware of their bodies, the object of lust, and they were ashamed, because they now became imperfect in this area, and they felt they had to cover themselves up. Before, and when they were pure and simple, without this Yetzirah of Taiva, they didn't have to cover themselves up. That whole issue didn't exist. And therefore, the imperfections manifest themselves most devastatingly, specifically in those areas which have to do with Taiva. The Bris Milah by the male, and the Nidah by the woman. They have to do with those parts which have to do with reproduction. Okay? That's what we see from Rabbi Kaplan, and we see how the Kedushas Mikdash and Itzur Nida are related. Now, I want to go with you, of course, into Reb Tzadok. What would the evening be without Reb Tzadok? So Reb Tzadok speaks here at great length about things which we've spoken about till now, and expands upon them and makes them a lot clearer. And I know that I've been brief till now. Now Reb Tzadok gets pretty involved in all these matters. Let's start from the bottom right. In the paragraph which starts with the hey. In the third line, mitzora mishulach mikol hashalosh machanos. A mitzora, person who has tzaras, leprosy in the common translation, although that's incorrect. Mishulach mikol hashalosh machanos is thrown out. We mentioned this before, of all three camps: machane shechina, the Beis Hamikdash; machane Leviya, the place where the Leviim lived; and machane Yisrael, the place where the regular shvatim lived. Shehu neged klipas hakas, why? Because mitzora has to do with jealousy and strife, corresponds to the evil of anger. Shein lo klal chelek b'Yisrael, which is not a Jewish yetzahara at all. It's not a Jewish sin. Vizov, however, a zov is mishulach rak mi machane Leviya. He's allowed to remain in machane Yisrael, not in machane Leviya. Why? She neged klipas hataiva. The sin of zov corresponds and comes as a result of the yetzahara of taiva. And for this, ain eitzon, there is no way to combat this, rak Talmud Torah, with the exception of learning Torah. How so? Hainu sheyachnis hayetzer v'acheshek, a person should redirect his lust and desire from the hirhurim of Avera, from thoughts of Avera, lios chamudi deraisa, to a drive and a lust for Torah. Kemosh nirul toelis l'zeh, and the yetzahara of taiva, of lust, was created in order to assist one in acquiring a lust for Torah. Ukemoshi el asin, and eventually this will be the case. When Am Yisrael eventually is redeemed and the world is rectified, there will still be a lust. There will still be a taiva, but the taiva will be for Torah. Kemosh kasu b'gemara, and like it says in the Gemara, ipaga b'cha menuvelze, if the repulsive Yetzirah attacks you, mashchel beis medrash, pull him into the beis medrash. What does it mean, pull the Yetzirah to the Beis Medrash? Channel your lust for the Avera, for doing the wrong thing, into a lust for acquiring more Torah and more Avodas Hashem, more worship and more mitzvahs. And therefore, the Zav is not, so to speak, outside the encampment of Israel. He's within the Jewish people. Therefore, he's only Mishulach Raki Machne Levia. He's only cast out of the encampment of Levim. Why Levim? Shebahem Nemar by Levim, it says, Yoru Mishpatech Yaakov, they're going to teach your laws to Yaakov, the Torah, the Torah, the Torah, to Am Yisrael. And therefore, Uksiv, and it also says, Uksiv, Uvasal Akwani by Levim, you're going to come to Akwani and Levim, and they're going to teach you Torah. Vikan Maschil, well, before I go on, and that's what Levim, who are involved in Torah, learning Torah, must, and teaching Torah, must therefore be pure of this taiva. In other words, they have to first eradicate this taiva before they're able to learn and to teach. Why? Because if a person has all these taivas, it's a sign that they haven't acquired Torah. The Rambam says, taivas and yetzahara only arise in a heart which is not full of wisdom. If your heart is full of wisdom, then you do not have this problem. Conversely, if you have this problem, it means your heart is not full of wisdom. And therefore, you better work on that before you become a posek for Am Yisrael, at least in the ideal situation. Now, the tzorich, however, now we get into a real very interesting issue, which we mentioned already before. The Kan Maschil, in the Parsha of Tazria, the Parsha begins, Mitumas Leda, discussing the tumah which begins at birth for a woman. She's tamei for 7 days, the gomer. And on the 8th day comes the bris milah. One has to understand the correspondence between the mitzvah of milah and the 7 days of tumah, because they seem to be linked. And there is, in fact, says Reb Tzadok, there's an opinion, which is the way we paskin, by the way, that if a woman does not become tamei tumas leida, such as if a woman gives birth by cesarean section, then her child is not nimol. She doesn't get circumcised on the 8th day if the 8th day comes out on Shabbos. In other words, that which a bris milah pushes off Shabbos is only a child who's born through the normal means in which there's tumas leida. If there isn't tumas leida, in other words, the child comes out by C-section, then the bris doesn't push off Shabbos. Cesarean. Okay. So in any event, but according to the other opinion, that nimol lishmona, that a child of this sort, a child born by cesarean, does get his bris after 8 days. So according to him, kosher. It's difficult to understand at first glance. Hashaychus the mitzvah smila, the correspondence between the mitzvah of milah with tumas leida and the impurity of birth. And the law itself is not clear. We paskin l'chumra that you don't make the bris on Shabbos, but it was never clarified exactly the halacha. Ach inyan asur tzorek, beautiful word. Ach inyan tumas leida. The matter of tumas leida, shu'af leida aveshla, is true even if she gives birth without seeing any blood, as long as she gives blood through the normal, natural means. V'af shemolida tzadik, and even if the woman gives birth to a tzadik. V'af shivolei Mashiach b'mehera b'yameinu, even when Mashiach is born speedily in our time, tiyem yikom akom ima tmeh leida. Still, that halacha is that his mother is tamei. She gave birth to such a tzaddik. Nonetheless, her mother is tamei. How could this be? Why? So says her tzaddik, "Mikom kam imot tamei later. My matam lo tamei tumazu. Why is she tamei? Achula pi mash kosu be medrash rabba. This is based on a medrash. Hein b'avon chulauti. It says David HaMelech says in Tehillim, I was conceived in avera. B'avon mole. It says the word avon with an extra vav. Says Ein Vav Vav Nun. What does that mean? Rabbi Lezer Omer Afilu Chasid Shev Chasidim. It says Yerbechule, but the rest of the statement is Lanos Atmo Niskaven. Even the greatest Chasid, the most pious person, when he has relations with his wife, has the intent of having pleasure for himself. Says Reb Tzadok. Says the Medrash. Klum Niskaven. This is David speaking. Avi Yishai Lamideni, when Yishai, my father, had relations with my mother, he did it in order to conceive me. Valo lo niskaven elo lanoso. He only did it for the purpose of his own pleasure. Vizeh nemar, and this is stated, al Yishai, concerning Yishai. Yishai, the father of David, is recorded as one of the four people, Shemes Beit Yoshanach, who did die despite not having any sin, who died because of the counsel of the Nachash, who counseled Chava to eat from the Eitz Hadaas Tov V'Ra. He didn't have any sins. He never committed an Avera. Nonetheless, says David HaMelech, it's true. An Avera he never committed. But he wasn't completely L'shem Shemayim. And that is what Adam HaRishon's sin did. The Adam HaRishon's sin created the unfortunate result that there is nobody who is perfectly L'shem Shemayim, kol ma'asecha L'shem Shemayim. Adam HaRishon was before the sin. Adam HaRishon, by his sin, deprived the world of the concept of a person who does everything for the sake of heaven. In other words, no matter how great a person is, there is a time in that person's life, or times in that person's life, when a person does something for their own pleasure. Yeah? That was afterwards. No, at the time that David was conceived, Yishai wasn't aware of this problem. It was only later on that Yishai became aware of the possible problem that he was descended from Ammon, because Ruth was from Moab, and maybe he was Pasul Lekal, he couldn't marry a Jewess. But that was only after David was born. It wasn't prior to David being born.
I thought
Was that what happened? I don't remember. Is that true? But anyway, it could be. But the Medrash here says explicitly that filu chasid sheb chasidim lanos atzom miskaven. In other words, it brings down that was the sin here. Give me a Medrash chelik beis down at the bottom. Brings down here, even though he doesn't quote it, that's what the Medrash says. Let me see if I can find it quickly. Yeah. Yeah. It's not the exact lesson which I quoted, but it's basically, I paraphrased it. He says, Dover Acha Isha Kita Tazriya Ado, deceive that is that which it says, Heim Bavon Chulalti, Rabbi Acha Amar, Afilu Imiyeh Chosid Shvachasidim, even the greatest Chosid, Iyev Shash Lo Yelo Tzad Echad Miyavon. He's always going to have one side, in other words, one aspect which is an Avera, not an actual Avera, but Amar Dali Fnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, David said in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribbono Elami. Klum niskavin abo Yishai lamideni, the Yishai intend to conceive me to give birth to me. V'alo nol niskavin elo anoso. His intent was for his pleasure. So it says explicitly that the Avera David HaMelech was referring to was this aspect of doing it not l'shem shemayim but for his own pleasure. Okay, so that's what it's referring to here, and so that's what again that's what Adam HaRishon's sin caused, that even though a person theoretically should do everything l'shem shamayim, and even acts of reproduction should be done l'shem shamayim, nonetheless, that's not the case. Now, I want to explain something here. It doesn't mean that a person shouldn't derive hanah. We say a person can, of course, derive hanah from mitzvahs. A person can benefit from mitzvahs, but that shouldn't be the reason a person does a mitzvah. A person should do a mitzvah l'shem shamayim, and he should get a geshmak, a pleasure, an enjoyment from having done a mitzvah. And all the mitzvahs were given in order to provide a person with pleasure, but with spiritual pleasure, not with physical pleasure. And David HaMelech is saying it's impossible that even the greatest chassid should be free of the drive to derive physical pleasure. That subtle sin comes from the sin of Adam HaRishon, who pursued his own agenda in the chait of Eitz Hadaas Tov V'Ra, from the pursuit of his own agenda, his own pleasure, in eating from the tree, despite the fact that it's told not to, comes this drive in the human being to pursue their own agenda, even though it's not an actual Avera, it has the elements of an Avera. And therefore he says, what was the counsel of the Nachash? Hainu masha Nachash hichnis ba'adam. The snake placed within the person, sheyargish anoas atmo, that a person should feel the drive for his own pleasure. Umizeh nitzmach tumas nido. And from this imperfection, which is in mankind, came the tumah of nida, in order to symbolize that there's something awry with this reproduction process. The Lord said, no matter how holy a person is, it's not possible that it be done completely l'shem shamayim. it's imperfect. And therefore, every month it has to start again afresh to symbolize that there's something wrong with the procedure, that not everything is optimum. Just like death represents the fact that not everything is optimum, so on a small scale, neither represents that. And that's why it says that that was part of the punishment. Harbe arbe, the Gemara says explicitly in Erevin, harbe arbe etzvonech, I'm going to cause you anguish in giving birth. Elu shnei tipei dami, it also refers to the two types of blood which come from a woman, dam besulim and dam nida. Be'etzim tel dibanim, umizeh nitzmach tmeyas leida kol shiva. And that's why, since in the reproduction process, no matter how great a person is, even Yishai, the father of David, who never committed a sin, nonetheless he had within himself the drive for his own pleasure, that's the tumah. Because what does tumah come from? It comes from separation from kedusha. Right? The opposite of kedusha is tumah. If somebody was completely holy, they would not have any tumah. Somebody's completely holy would never die. But it's impossible to be completely free of any degree of separation from God whatsoever. And therefore people die, except for Eliyahu HaNavi. And it's impossible for a person in the process of reproduction and conceiving to be completely free of his own personal benefit and drive and for his own personal pleasure, and therefore there must be tumah associated with any type of giving birth in this world. And therefore he says, V'achakach, umizeh nitzmach tmeyas lidach leider kol shiva. From this comes 7 days of tumah. V'achakach, however, subsequently, uvayom ha-shmini imo. On the seventh day comes the bris milah. What is the, eighth day comes the bris milah. What's the eighth day of the bris milah? V'oz maschil dam toar. Then the blood becomes toar. The halacha states that after the seventh day, at the eighth day and the bris milah, the blood which the woman continues to see, bisman hazeh, in our day and age, were not lenient. But in those times, they were lenient. That blood which she sees after the eighth day, which can go on for many days afterwards, is considered to be blood which is pure, and she can have relations with her husband. Vav sheroh adam, even though she sees blood, she's torah. Why? Sharei me'oz holida tzadik. From that time of the bris milah, it's considered as if she gave birth to a tzadik. The kol mandiz gazer ikrei tzadik. Anybody who receives a bris milah is called a tzaddik. In other words, the symbolism of the milah is the rectification of the imperfection of the world. The world is now imperfect. Am Yisrael is given mitzvahs to rectify it. The bris milah symbolizes the rectification of the world. We take the imperfect world and we make it better by perfecting it. And that's the symbolism of the fact that the woman becomes tahar partially after 7 days. Why? Because at that seventh day, on the eighth day rather, is the bris milah, which represents our perfection of the world. But even after perfection, says Reb Tzadok, v'zesh b'zor HaKadosh, b'dmei Torah ilein d'mei milah, the d'mei Torah are as a result of the blood of the milah, u'mikom mekom nichnos l'mikdash adayin asura. But nonetheless, until she stops seeing blood completely, she's not allowed to go into the Beis HaMikdash. Why? Because again, although one can perfect oneself to a very great degree, like Yishai, the father of David, did, ultimately, there's still that drive within oneself for one's own personal pleasure. And that is what got us kicked out of Gan Eden. And the Beis HaMikdash, like we said, represents in our world the Gan Eden. And therefore, the symbolism is that as long as we have that degree of imperfection within ourselves, we're not going to go back to the real Gan Eden. And this Dam, which represents that, the blood which comes out of the woman when she gives birth, is a impediment for her to go into our lower form of Gan Eden, the Beis HaMikdash, in order to represent on a scale model that master problem which the world possesses.
Why does man have a counterpart? Man also went in. Adam went for his own pleasure too.
Yeah.
So why does man have a counterpart?
Well, he has different curses. He has to work the land. Well, there are plenty of curses for man. Don't worry. We're not talking about those curses tonight. Okay, but Tumas Leda, that has to do with the actual, with the giving birth. In other words, and you see before, the logic dictates that's true, because Rabbeinu B'chai said, since the woman is the one who conceives the child, so the tools of conception are primarily within the woman, that's why they are far more susceptible and sensitive to Tumah and Tara. And that's why this manifests itself specifically in the woman and not in the man. Okay? Now, I see your mom is not going to get anywhere near where I want to get up to tonight. Maybe we'll continue on next week with that. So now Reb Tzadok brings out a very interesting thing. I think I'm only going to get till here, and then I'll leave that for next week. The Reb Tzadok brings down the There's an interesting pasuk in the Chumash. The pasuk in the Chumash says that Lavan ran after Yaakov, and he finally reached with Yaakov, you know, when Yaakov went back to Israel. And when he reached Yaakov, he was going to attack Yaakov. But the HaKadosh Baruch Hu came to him in a dream the night before and said, you better not touch Yaakov at all. So next day, Lavan said, you know, I could have destroyed you, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu told me not to. They made a meal, and they made a pact, and they put up a stone. And the stone was the boundary between the two. Neither of them would pass the boundary unless they were coming for a good purpose. And the stone Yaakov called Gal-Ed. And Lavan called it Yegar Sadusa. That's what it says in the Pasuk. Now, I never made this connection before, till today. The Tzaddik makes the connection. Gal-Ed is very much, that's obviously linked to the Gilad. Gilad is the area where that stone was placed. And Gilad was the land which was then inherited by Reuven, Gad, and Chatzi Shevet Menashe. They inhabited Gilad, right? And it says, Chazal tell us, there were three Ore Miklot, three cities of refuge for murderers in Gilad, where there are only 2.5 tribes, and three cities of refuge for murderers in Israel proper, where there were 9.5 tribes. Imbalance. Says the Chazal in Makkos, BeGilad Shchichei Rotzchim. In Gilad, they're murderers. Why there are a lot of murderers in Gilad? So Reb Tzaddik comes to explain. I'm gonna read the 10th line from the bottom in the third column, the second column from the end on the bottom left. L'chein amru zal. That's what Chazal say in Makkos Daf Tes, BeGilad Shchichei Rotzchim, in Gilad, the lot of murderers. Ki yadua, because it's well known, Shtei Rosh Yaroh, saying there are two sources of evil. Lo Tirtzach, not to murder, velosinaf, and not to have adulterous relations, which correspond, like we know by now very well, negan mitzora v'zov, to mitzora and zov, right? Mitzora corresponds to losinaf, because that's strife and jealousy, and zov corresponds to losinaf, which is adultery and licentiousness. Zov ein mishtalech v'machane Yisrael. A zov is not cast out of the encampment of Am Yisrael. Shadov is an imshach v'makor Yisrael. This comes out of the source of Am Yisrael. In other words, it's a good thing. It's a Jewish Yetzara. Shamakor la'avodu achuka. One of the sources of avodas Hashem in our imperfect state is our lust and our yearning for closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and love of Torah. V'gam ha'tayves kasher heim al pi aroi. Besides that, says Reb Tzaddik, you should know that tayven in general, when it's properly done, heim ikara chayim, they are primary in keeping life sustained, v'ashora in reproducing, v'olad in giving birth, chayim to new life, the domi which are similar to ourselves. In other words, it says in Gemara Yuma, Daf Samach Gimel, that once they eradicated the Yetzer of Taiva, and nobody had any kids for that period. So they have to restore it in order that people should have kids. V'chein achila. And so too the lust of eating. It's important. Chai aguf. Gives life force to the body. V'chein b'yushalayim, and therefore Yerushalayim is nus, roshay tov oseim. And therefore in Yerushalayim, the primary problem was nus. Jews have this problem. Ukamash Kosub Sanhedrin, like it says in Sanhedrin, very powerful statement in Sanhedrin. Lo Avru Yisrael, Lo Avdu, it should be Lo Avru, Avdu. Lo Avdu Yisrael, Avod Yisrael, Kdei Lahatil and Arayas. The entire reason why Am Yisrael worshipped Avod Yisrael, such as with the Cheta Eka, was always an excuse to get to Arayas. They needed to get past God in order to get to Gili Arayas, so they created Avod Yisrael in order to be Megala Arayas. But the reason why they created Avod Yisrael was specifically for that reason. Avo Bumos, but by Goyim on the contrary. The primary Yetzirah is Ritzichah's murder. V'zeh mishtalei chutzu machan Yisrael, and anything which has anything to do with strife, jealousy, anger, murder, out of the Jewish encampment. Kumash Kosovo Koshuz V'uzal, like Chazal said, Al Givonim, the Gibeonites, who demanded, if you recall, 10 sons, I think it was 10, sons of Shaul HaMelech, to kill as retribution for Shaul having committed some minor sin vis-a-vis them. What happened was that Shaul killed the city of Nov. And the city of Nov, which was a city of Kohanim, was the economic base of the Gibeonites. Why? Because the Gibeonites used to bring food and sell to the Kohanim in the city of Nob. So as a result of that, they demanded retribution to kill the 10 sons of Shaul. And that's why at that time they were excluded from being Jews forever and ever. Why? Because people like that don't belong in Am Yisrael. We can't take murderers. The Dovet and Nimshach Yisrael mitzad Lavan. And if we do have the Yetzirah of murder within ourselves, of strife, comes from Lavan. Shusharish Imos, because our Imos, Rivka, Leah and Rachel, come from Lavan. Vaboni made me siachsim elav. The truth is that in determining the tribe of the son, it goes primarily after the father. And therefore, lekach ein zeh machni sro b'derech hamishpacha umachaneh. then therefore, in terms of being rooted in the Jewish psyche, the Yetzer Hara of anger and of strife is not as Jewish a Yetzer Hara. It's not as strong within us. Because in terms of the halachos, kimishpacha se'emeinu kumishpacha, the family of the mother is not the family, right, because we determine family based on the father. It's the religion which is based on the mother, but the family is based on the father. Ramikomakom, nonetheless, mikohu nimtza b'hem. Nonetheless, we have it. Even though it's not inherent to us. And therefore, Vayignov, Yaakov Avinu stole Lavan's heart. He didn't want to tell Yoav when he was going. Really what was going on is a tremendous Kabbalistic thing, a mystical thing. He wanted to completely uproot and sever his connection to Lavan. Vashayichlon, any connection to him. Lavan Radha Vachavad Radha, but Lavan ran after him. And he wanted to reestablish his connection. Vamra Bonim Bonai, and he wanted to say, no, your children are my children. Hichzili Achsim Lo, and he wanted to give them these drives, which are Goyish drives. The Sheyesh Lo Chelek B'hem, and they should be part and parcel of him. The Chenat Sonim Kol Nafshus Yisroel. What did he complain about the sheep? Said they're my sheep. Because the sheep were also, they mystically represented Am Yisroel. Tzon, the sheep with Yaakov, always had a mystical representation of the Am Yisroel. And as a matter of fact, I think it says somewhere that he had 600,000 sheep. I think it's brought down somewhere. And therefore he said, Kanal Osayin Zayin, he brings, so I spoke about it before. Omar Tzoni said, it's my sheep. Umitzaten Nishrash HaGolus. And from this came about all the strife which caused Golus later on. Vizobikish Lakos Kol, and that's why he wanted to uproot everything. It says, Arami Ovidovi, what? Lachzirim Liosuaikar, to make them like him. Vumisyachti Achrov, that they should be his children. And then he goes on to say that we're not free of it. And then he says, in any event, all of Eivir HaYardin is Eretz HaGilad, because that is the land where Lavan left his impression. And he left his impression in this Gal Eid. That's considered to be outside Eretz of Fe'im Maisa and Masechta Nedarim. It says that Ula was walking along with two Goyim. No, I think it's a Machlokas, whether Goyim or Jews, I believe it was Jews. He was walking with two Jews, and one got up and killed the other. And Ula had to there go along with the killer in order that he himself shouldn't be murdered. Anyway, they came to Eretz Yisrael. And he went to Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan was amazed. How did this happen? How can one Jew kill another Jew? So Ula said, it's before we crossed the Jordan. So Yochanan said, oh, I understand, it's a chutz laretz. There, there's a lev ragos. In other words, the impact of the goyim is upon us that we acquire these non-Jewish yetzaharas. But the Jewish yetzahara is the one of taiva, not the one of gilad, of gal eid, of lavan, the one of ritzicha, which corresponds to tzaraz. And like I said, we'll finish next week the rest of it. And then we'll go on to speak about mikveh afterwards.